Hello and welcome to episode 59 of the Ross Bolin Podcast, RBP 59, brought to you by Grand X Media. I am your host, Ross Bolin, here at the Grand X Media Studios in Austin, Texas, with producer Micah Weiner.
Sup, Ross? Great to be here in Austin, Texas with you.
Indeed it is. If you are new to our show, every episode is broken down into segments. You can find those with time cues in the description. You don't have to listen to any of the preceding episodes in order to enjoy this one. But if you like the show, I would encourage you to go back, listen to them all. There's a big backlog for you now, 58 of them, if this is your first. You don't want to miss out on any of the inside jokes or running jokes or priceless knowledge that we're dishing out here. Get you some. You can follow our show on Instagram, at the Ross Bolin Podcast, and on Twitter, at Ross Bolin Pod. We are also on Facebook somewhere, nobody cares. Every day, through these social media outlets, we put out photos, videos, things related to the show, highlighting segments from old episodes or recent topics. We also make announcements and shit through these mediums, so it's important that you follow them. We also fill up our Instagram story every day with slides that RBP gang members have sent to Micah and I on Snapchat. My Snapchat, by the way, is at WR Bolin. Micah's is at MicahTX. So send us those snaps. Keep them coming. All the good ones we will include on that Instagram story at the Ross Bolin Podcast. So check it out. A few announcements and amends. First, I've been hit up repeatedly by people about our recent discussion about Fortnite cross-platform competition. And it has been brought to my attention that it's not as simple as I thought it was. Apparently, you can only play with somebody cross-platform if you've already invited them to your party or some shit. I'm not exactly sure how it works. So here, let me clarify. The problem I have with Fortnite is people using mouse pads and keyboards. Apparently, you can hook your mouse pad and keyboard up to your Xbox or your PlayStation. This is bullshit. Play with a fucking controller or play with a mouse and keypad. Keep us away from each other. People are building much more quickly with their mouse than they could with a controller, and that's what's throwing off the competitive balance. All right? Are we clear? Good. Some news here. Inside information from a Chipotle employee. Once again, this
ooh,
is not the first time this has happened. As you all well know, we have long sought after Chipotle sponsorship, basically by extorting them in the form of our Cut the Check campaign, if you want to call it that, in which we threatened to continue snatching Chipotle napkins and Tabasco bottles in bulk unless they cut the check and sponsor the podcast. Well, it turns out there is something else RBP gang members can do to maybe spur the Chipotle executives towards actually accomplishing this partnership. You can go to a website. It's www.chipotlefeedback.com/Chipotle-RCPT, as in receipt, dash survey. Every time you go to Chipotle, they give you a receipt. You can use that receipt code on this website to give responses, and these responses are actively monitored. So any responses or comments, they're being automatically parsed to identify themes and topics, particularly those that are new or emerging. So the appearance of a completely new theme or topic would likely be noticed by the feedback teams, especially if these were highly correlated with a positive or negative impact on scores. So what you're going to want to do is blow them up with Cut the Check. That's all.
Yes, the words Ross Bolin Podcast must be included
right
in this as well. Perhaps right. RBP and gang, gang, gang. There's probably an algorithm here, and the words Ross Bolin Podcast need to just be popping up all the time.
Just splatter it all over the place.
And then whatever you write from there is fine, but they need to know that the Ross Bolin Podcast people, we're
making an impact.
We're coming.
Their bottom line is being affected, and it could all stop today if they chose to let it stop, to get it to stop, to cut the check. Shout out to Mary from Pasadena for doubting I'd ever hear your phone call. I heard that shit. What's up? Micah, you're seeing Bun B on Friday.
That's right.
This is going to be fun.
I'm very excited. He's playing the Antone's 43rd anniversary party. Although I think it's just a marketing ploy because the Antone's 43rd anniversary goes like all month long.
Okay.
But it doesn't really matter. Bun B will be here Friday in Austin. And I'm excited to see the Trill OG.
Do you know who's coming, bringing with him?
I don't. I know almost nothing. I bought the tickets several months ago, and I am excited. My friend Coach Bobby is coming with me. It's like a, this is like a dream come true for us.
Are you going to get all lit up before?
Probably. I would say probably not, but as I am in the midst of an athletic endeavor that we're going to get into next month.
You are.
As of right now, the chances are pretty good I'm going to have more than one weak cocktail before this event.
Yeah, well, enjoy it. I'm very jealous.
Hopefully, if anybody knows Bun and he wants to throw it low with me backstage, just, you know, make that happen.
Yeah, let's get that connection. I need a picture of Micah with Bun B throwing it low.
It's the only thing we need.
Another note, I am recording wearing glasses today.
This is bizarre for me.
Any semblance of gangster or any shred of edge that I had, it has been completely evaporated by me wearing glasses. And here's the point. I have absolutely atrocious vision. I can't see a goddamn thing without my contacts in. And I ran out of contacts, so I'm stuck wearing glasses today. And I don't feel like me. It's just weird. Like, I feel like my whole look and persona, it works until I put glasses on, and then it's just like, this is weird. This is all getting weird. I feel like John Duda, for those of you who know that who that is. That's kind of what I'm looking like today, and it's really something.
Wow.
Which brings us to our first segment. Evolution should have taken me out a long time ago. I'm going to kickstart this what will be a broader topic by kind of trashing myself to make a point. So on an everyday basis, just to survive, I need several things. I need contact lenses in my eyes or I can't see, can't drive, can't really walk. Mike is sitting 5 feet from me right now. If I didn't have these glasses on, he would look like a white blob of sorts. I need allergy medication that I take nightly or else I would sneeze and cough my way to death, as Central Texas and Austin in particular, the worst environment for allergies in the United States. I need an antidepressant that I take nightly for general anxiety. I need Xanax in case I have a panic attack that I take as needed. Eyeglasses if I'm out of contacts, like right now. It's fucking ridiculous. And the point is, like, why am I still allowed to live? I am clearly trash. And the broader point here is, think about it. Our whole species is a fucking mess. Human beings. We need medicine and outside help for pretty much everything we do. Without science and technology, we'd just be thumbing our own asses in the jungle, probably getting wiped out by apex predators. The fact that we need help seeing, reproducing, keeping our teeth in our heads, getting our dicks up, keeping our hair, stifling even the common cold, not to mention all the different diseases and sicknesses that would just burn through our asses if we didn't have medicine, it's nuts. And the fact that we're still running this planet is an absolute knock on every other species in existence. Thank God for the human brain, because it is literally the only reason we're still going. And if you're one of the people who's sitting there with 20/20 vision and perfect teeth and a flawless immune system, that's cool. Must be nice. I'm not saying most of us. I'm just saying most of us should be wiped out. And if you're one of the flawless humans that maybe should be here, the rest of us are just using science to plow our way through life. I don't know what percentage that is of people, but I'd be interested to know, like, how many people are relying on multiple medications a day just to function? It's a lot. As we know, the prescription epidemic in this country is nuts. And I have to assume that translates to some degree worldwide. We're just a trash species wrecking the planet, desperately clinging to medicine and science to survive, popping blue pills for boners and getting shot up with needles with all sorts of things just to keep afloat. It's insane. Michael, what do you have that you rely on a daily basis to keep you going? Or are you one of the flawless humans?
Oh, no. Oh, no. No, I start every morning with a 24-hour allergy pill.
Uh-huh.
I also take allergy drops later in the afternoon. I take a host of probiotics so I can get good poos in.
Good poo is good. It's important.
Even though I try and eat well, sometimes without the probies in my life. You know, I'm adding bacteria into my body. That seems counterintuitive, but that's where we are. Same thing with the allergy drops. I know that we have some listeners in Central Texas. We probably have listeners in other places that have allergies.
Sure.
About 6 months ago, I got allergy drops. My doctor told me to go get these. They've changed my life.
What are they?
You take three of them, you put them under your tongue. You do it every day. And it puts, first they test you for everything you're allergic to.
Right.
And the things that you're most allergic to, they create a set of drops, a formula that puts small doses of the things you're most allergic to into your body. And then you take that as a drop. And so your body builds up a resistance to those things.
This sounds expensive.
It's shockingly not that much. It's like $40 a quarter.
Did you have to get stabbed with a whole bunch of needles?
The test was expensive, yes, and I got stabbed with dozens and dozens of needles.
See, I don't know if I can do that.
But it doesn't really hurt. It was good.
I'm not a needle guy. It's not even about the pain. It's about the needle.
I'm now in an extreme amount of ibuprofen daily. Up to 8 to 12, I think, which is probably unsafe. Like, I take 4 in the morning, I take 4 in the afternoon, and sometimes I take 4 more at night.
Just for soreness and recovery from your strenuous workouts?
Yes, from some of my training at the moment.
Okay.
Those are the big ones. I, not to brag, have amazing vision.
Good for you.
Yeah, it is. It's one of my superpowers. Although I've noticed things up close have gotten a little fuzzier recently.
Ah.
But I can read... This is like one of the best things I have in the whole Micah arsenal.
Okay.
Is I can see the score of the game from the TV on the other side of the bar 100 times out of 100.
Yeah, see,
people are shocked by, I'm like, oh shit, 72-65. And they're like, what?
I can see that if I've got my contacts in or if I'm wearing glasses. But if I am not only can I not see the score of the game, it might as well be Tom and Jerry cartoons. If it's more than 5 feet away, I can't see anything that's going on.
Yeah.
It's really sad. And that freaks me out. The idea, like, if you were to just take me and place me into the jungle.
Right, the desert island situation.
Yeah, with no pills, if a plane crashed and I was in a...
You're the castaway.
I was in a Tom Hanks situation in Castaway. I'm fucked. It's over. The second I run out of contacts, which I assume I've got some on me, like, you know, in my luggage or whatever, which I just, you know, let's assume that I find my luggage, that it floats up to the beach. I'm screwed once the contacts are gone. What the fuck? I guess I could try to find glass and like form it into a... I don't know how prescriptions work or how eyeglasses work.
No, no.
I just don't know. I would not survive is the point. And that kind of freaks me out a little bit. I just wish I was a better human being and I'm not.
You should optimize yourself.
I need, and maybe I should get LASIK. I don't know. It's the fact that I know my kids are going to need the same shit. I had braces for like 3.5 years just to get my teeth straight. I had like a Herbst appliance. I've had all manner of things done with my teeth. I've been relying on contacts and fucking glasses for, I don't know, 20 years now. It's just, sometimes I feel like, you know, Darwinism should have removed me from this whole equation. I'm glad it hasn't. Don't get me wrong. But, it's a little bizarre. It's a little bizarre how much we lean on science, technology, medicine to just stay operating as a species at all. Like we can, I mean, it seriously, the amount of people who have trouble reproducing is astounding at this point. Like,
well, you mentioned Viagra or the blue pill, for lack of a better term, or any sort of erectile dysfunction.
Right.
We live in a world where without these drugs, there's a large portion of our population that could not physically reproduce because they couldn't get their dick hard.
That's crazy to me.
Like this has got to be a new, this is not something, this is new in the world, in the history of mankind.
Nature just wants us gone, desperately wants us gone, and we're just every day fighting it by cheating, basically, with cheat codes. That's what we're doing. And I'm glad, in all seriousness, props to us as a species for battling through adversity. We are the ultimate survivors. Extinction is for pussies. But it's just kind of sad when you look at it, you know, in a negative light, that we need all these things and that I believe, in all seriousness, that evolution should have taken me out a long time ago and would have if it weren't for scientific and medical advances that allow me to live in at least a half-suitable manner. I think I do an okay job. It just blows my mind. It was just one of those things I was thinking about. I'm sitting here wearing fucking glasses today, and it's just, it's really something. Like, you know, when you have glasses on, you can see, you know, I can see through the frame of the glasses where everything is perfect, and then I can see in my peripheral outside that frame. And it's a whole different world. It's a completely different fucking ballgame. I can't see dick. the microphone 4 feet away from me that's not being used right now, it's just one of the extras in the studio, doesn't even look like a microphone. It's just a black blur. It's disturbing. But enough about me and my medical issues. Next segment, hotline calls. We are going to go on a bit of a hotline call extravaganza today. I've decided to do many more calls than we normally do. We had a lot of good ones, and there's a lot of good things I want to discuss that these calls bring up. So buckle your seatbelt or hold on to your butts, as Samuel L. Jackson would say in Jurassic Park, because things are going to get a little weird. Our hotline number is 888-WR-BOLIN. You can call the hotline anytime, any day. It's a voicemail. You just leave us a question. Say your name and where you're from, a question, a take, a suggestion for a topic we could discuss. Maybe it's some constructive criticism about the show, or you just need somewhere to vent about how you hate your boss or your uncle or something. I don't know. Whatever you want, the hotline is there at your disposal. We listen to as many of the calls as we can. There's a ridiculous backlog that's now over 1,000 calls, but we're working our way through them. I picked out, I think, 11 calls for us to listen to and respond to on the show today. Here's the first one.
Hey, Ross. It's Hal from Seattle. I drive a 1985 Ford Bronco Eddie Bauer Edition, so I'm not sure if you know a lot about that, but it's a very large, very wide vehicle. And I just parked in a parking lot that literally only had contact spots. First of all, what the fuck, right? Like, it's 2018. We don't have room for bigger cars. Second of all, what is your opinion on double parking, right? Now, here's my thing. If you have a small car, you shouldn't double park, right? But I sometimes have to double park out of necessity. My car just didn't fit in a compact spot. Does that make me a trash human? Should I get a smaller car? I don't want to, but should I? You know, and I got lucky this time. There's a plumbing truck that had a double park, so we sort of, between the two of us, shared three spots. But, you know, Ross, I don't know. I just want your opinion. Thanks, man. Love the show. Oh, hey, Mike, I got you. Bye.
So I would say this. My opinion on double parking is if you're not in a crowded lot where there are plenty of options for spaces available, go for it. Do what you have to do to get your big-ass car parked. But if you're in a parking lot like, say, our office parking lot, for example, where spaces are hard to come by, if you double park, dude, we're going to mess you up. We're going to write several strongly worded notes.
Passive-aggressive. Worded passive-aggressive notes.
You can't do it. You can't take up more than one spot in a lot where space is hard to come by. You just can't do it. You made the decision to drive that tank, and you got to live with it. All right? But to get a little, you know, more general here, small cars versus big cars. I drove a big car the first, like, 15 years that I was driving, or I guess a little less, maybe 10 years. The first car I ever got was a massive Ford Expedition soccer mom mobile. My mom drove it before me. Gave it to me as my first car. As I've discussed before on this show, I destroyed that car. In college, I eventually graduated to getting a Tahoe because frat. Now, it was very used, and it was not anywhere near new, for the record. Post-grad, I ended up totaling that Tahoe by ramming into the back of a boat on Mopac in Austin. It was tight. And I took the insurance check I got from that incident and bought a 2005 Lexus sedan. It's a total piece of shit. It's small. And that's the life I'm living now. But I did it because I paid for almost the entire car up front, and I had like a $100 payment a month, so it was super easy. It was a nice way to like build some credit. But I will be honest with you, I yearn for the days of being a road hog, just dominating traffic and seeing over everyone in a big old SUV. Maybe someday I'll be back in that high seat. I don't know. Maybe. It could happen. But here's my knock on little cars, is that you could get smeared by some moron who isn't paying attention and driving an 18-wheeler or a massive Ford Excursion or a Hummer or an F-350 or whatever at any given time. I don't like putting my life in the hands of the other humans any more than I have to, right? I don't have enough trust and faith in the drivers of humanity to not smear me. And I don't want to get smeared. The tight thing about little cars is that you feel like you're going way faster. As a guy who'd always driven SUVs, I was not familiar with what it was like to drive a little car. You feel like you're going a lot faster because you're closer to the road. That's the only pro, really. And then I guess it's easier to maneuver, and you can fit into the compact parking spots. But and maybe the emissions are lower or whatever. Although I have to assume that my 2005 Lexus sedan's emissions are not lower than like a 2018 SUV, if I had to guess. But I also don't know shit about cars or being a mechanic or anything like that. So I don't know. Micah, your thoughts on small cars versus big cars? You're a little car guy now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I used to be, my first car, of course, was a Ford Bronco.
Yes.
A 96.
Which, by the way,
for having 95.
Props to our caller.
I wasn't ballin' enough to have the Eddie Bauer edition, although I always coveted it.
Yeah.
What a ridiculous thing. It's just like the whitest thing ever. They should have just said, like, white person model.
Yes.
Like, here's all the all the earth tones you could possibly use. But that being said, I've got a couple rules about double parking. When you drive a big truck, it's okay to double park on occasion. The thing is, you have to adapt. You have to be park on the back side of the garage or of the parking lot guy.
Right.
If you go to the grocery store, you can double park if you're in the back of the lot.
That's a good
point. If you're within 300 yards to the front door, you can't do that. No one's leaving you a note if you're on the back row in two spots, right in the middle of them. No one's saying, hey, fucking asshole, learn how to park.
Yeah.
But if you do that on the, you know, 10 spots from the front, you're just a jerk. You can't do it. So this is the life you chose. I'm sorry. Also, you probably need to learn how to park a little bit better.
Yeah. That's an underrated skill set, parking.
It's something that I am not great at, and I feel like part of it is because I started driving this giant truck. So I would just go park in the back of the lot and say, fuck it. Like, I'm not even going to try and park
right
here. And two, like, you know, that's a difficult thing to park. So I just never got great at it. My girlfriend is from New York. And so she's used to parking in the city. And she can fucking parallel park a car so fast. And it is so hot. Like, it's one of the most arousing things about her.
Wow.
Yes. The way that she just, like, she'll pull up, she'll take one look and just... Whoop,
so you lock might, it in, you might never like, need, wow. You might never need the blue pill. You just ask for her to parallel park real quick, and you're ready
yes
to go.
It is. I am fully torqued.
Yeah.
That sounds weird, but that's true. It's a very attractive thing for me that she is much better at parking than I am.
I envy her ability to parallel park. Not her envy. I don't envy her ability to rev your engine, so to speak, but I do envy her ability to parallel park. That is not something I can do. I never, as we have talked about, I never took driver's ed. I never had to do the parallel parking test or any driving test for that matter. I'm still not really sure how I have a driver's license at all, but I can't do it. I won't even try it. Geometry was never my thing, or any kind of math, anything with angles. I just can't do it. I don't even try. It should also be noted, my dad, Steve, his strategy with parking is always to park as far away from wherever it is you're going as possible. And it's infuriating, but it's also genius. You avoid anybody hitting your car, dinging your car, any of that shit. You can double park to your heart's desire. Nobody's going to care because your car's 40 miles away. Like, if we go to a Texans game, he parks like a 15-minute walk from the stadium in like a field somewhere. If we go to the grocery store, he's in that back row that you just spoke to. The very back, like where the fucking employees park. That's just the way he rolls, and that's a way to avoid all this shit altogether.
That's the life you have to choose.
Yeah.
If you're going to be big truck guy.
I think that's a good option.
As to whether big cars versus small cars, sometimes you miss having a truck. I mean, I know I do. It's dope to be able to like go off-road or whatever.
You're not going to go off-roading. Where are you going to go off-roading?
I mean, not like off-road, but if you're driving on the beach. Or if, like, you're in traffic and you want to run over the median to the access road, if you're, like, on I-10 head to Houston.
Yeah, that's tight.
Like, that's tight. But generally speaking, I really don't miss... And riding on top of the traffic is cool, but it's not that big a deal. I this sounds lame, but I'm much more of a... You know, we talked about our dream cars earlier a couple episodes ago. I'm much more into just kind of, you know, function at this point for my vehicle. And... I've often thought about getting a two-door car because I haven't had anyone sit in the back seat of my car in months.
That's a good
just
point.
Like it doesn't. Why do I have four doors?
Every situation where I would have somebody in the back seat, we are Ubering. I don't think I've had a human being in the backseat of my car ever. And I've had it for 3.5, 4 years now.
Exactly. It's 2018. Like, why do I need doors there?
I'll throw my dogs back there, but...
Yeah, you know. See, I don't even have a dog. I don't even need that back seat. And it's just not necessary.
So you're not worried about getting smeared, though? Like getting hit by some jackass who's texting, and the next thing you know, your car is, being smushed into a little square?
No, I don't think... No, I'm not. That's not my concern.
I guess in Austin, especially, like, we have the tamest, most fucking docile drivers of any city I've ever been in. The odds are a lot lower here, but if you're driving around in Houston in a small car, that's when I get worried, which I have to do fairly often when I go home to visit my folks and my brother and shit. So, I don't know. I have a question, Micah. How the fuck did the Eddie Bauer edition even come into existence? Is Eddie Bauer not a clothing company?
Yes.
How did they become the people that made a partnership with Ford?
I think they did Expeditions for a minute, too.
They
when
did.
The Expedition first
they
came
did.
Out. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know, but it's a great fit. It's just like... Let's put earth tones all over your car and make it only appealing to white people.
Yeah.
It's dope. I'm in, really.
Yeah, if you're a black guy and you go to the Ford dealership and they offer you the Eddie Bauer edition, you walk away. Because your salesman doesn't know what he's doing.
That's right. But I don't know when they stopped doing that. I'd be interested.
Yeah, I don't think they do it anymore, though, right?
No. I mean, I had friends in college used to make fun of me for saying that I just look like an Eddie Bauer ad because all I wore were earth tones. And... I actually didn't really take it as much of an insult.
Who shops at Eddie Bauer, though? Who are these people?
There are two in the Austin area. Round Rock and the Hill Country Galleria. Not either close.
I'm looking at their clothes on their website right now, and it's just like the most generic white guy stuff.
Yeah.
It's like the Gap.
They had a moment back in the 90s, though. I guess before Patagonia kind of took over.
That was like 30 fucking years ago. How are they still around? I think one of my aunts works at Eddie Bauer. I apologize if I'm dumping on your company. I just don't know what they're doing here. But somebody must be buying it.
Apparently, they were doing Eddie Bauer Fords up until 2010.
Man. You know what? That might be my next move. When the old Lexus kicks the bucket, which could be, frankly, any day now, maybe I'll go get an Eddie Bauer. I've always wanted one.
Wow, they did Aerostar vans through 1994.
Aerostar vans?
Yeah. Ford
like
Aerostar.
The big ass van.
And a Ford Taurus 2008, 2009.
Okay, that's what I need. I need an Aerostar Eddie Bauer that I can put some subs in the back and just be a giant walking contradiction. That's what I need. Anyway.
Yeah, the Eddie Bauer Ford partnership began in 1984 and ended in 2010.
The more you know.
So there you go.
Knowledge is power. Next call.
Hey, guys. It's Sean from Virginia. First time ever listening to you. Great podcast. I was throwing it back to episode 49. You guys talking about pissing on your feet and legs for urinals. First of all, absolute bullshit. I hate it. But you guys should check out this guy who just Google a fly in the urinal. This guy ended up painting a little fly in the urinal. They throw it in stadiums, hotels. It saves like 80% of like cleaning supplies. He won the Nobel Peace Prize for economics. Insane shit. Check it out. Thanks, guys. Keep it up.
Okay. This is crazy. So I did Google this, and I had never heard about this. I don't know how it's possible that I never heard about this. I don't know how this hasn't been utilized in every fucking urinal in the entire world. It turns out, in 2017, and I'm getting all my information here from the Washington Post. It's an article written by Christopher Ingram. It's called, What's a Urinal Fly? And what does it have to do with winning a Nobel Prize? This guy, the University of Chicago's Richard Thaler, or Thaler, he won the Nobel Prize in economics in 2017 by inventing this urinal fly. And the story goes that in the early 90s, the cleaning manager at Amsterdam's Schiphol Airport was trying to reduce spillage around urinals. It's the issue that we have discussed time and time again, the splashback, the spillage. And he settled on etching small photorealistic images of flies on the urinals right near the drain. The idea being he wanted to give people something to aim at. Why a fly? It says, flies are small and annoying and a little gross, but they're not scary like, say, a spider, which might discourage people from using the urinal at all. Fucking genius. So, this dude started painting these little photorealistic flies on urinals, and they reported an astonishing 80% reduction in urinal spillage after introducing these flies, which is nuts. Apparently, they estimated this resulted in an 8% reduction in total bathroom cleaning costs at the airport. So these urinal flies have begun showing up at restrooms all around the world. The dude won a fucking Nobel Prize for it, which, frankly, not to insult his innovation here, I believe that to be a great move that he made. I thought the Nobel Prize, the bar was a little higher than reducing splashback on urinals. I thought you had to, like, you know, cure a disease or write a book. I don't know what I thought you had to do, but more than this.
It seems like a low bar.
Yeah. But this is crazy. I had no fucking idea. I have never seen one of these urinal flies. And now I'm upset.
I think I've seen these. I've seen urinals, newer urinals that have like at least like a little dot there or something. So this idea is it's brilliant. I had heard some stories about this saving 80% of splash, and it's true.
I told
you about how when I worked in high school as a cart boy at a local country club, the clubhouse guys would always talk about how they can send emails out to the members. They can message them. They can put signs at the front. No one will ever listen to anything that you put in except for the message boards above the urinals.
Ah.
Which I always just thought was, there's something about men being in front of a urinal that if you reach for their attention, you can grab it.
Well, we got nothing else to do. We're just standing there with our dicks
That's
in our
right.
hands.
So if you put a little fly thing, dudes are just going to pee on it.
Yeah, I'm going to aim at the fly if I see the fly.
100%. Just gives you something to aim at.
I spend, I'd say, I don't know, 92% of my time at a urinal figuring out where to aim. Like, I try all the different spots and stuff because I'm trying to figure out, like, where's the best spot, and every urinal is different. That's the biggest problem. Like, for example, at our office here, I have now figured out where to pee to keep it from getting on my feet. But if I go to another urinal, the spot's not going to be the same spot, right? So I need these flies. I need something. A fucking target, anything. And really, it's not even me. I'm not the biggest problem. It's these people pissing all over the ground. And they're probably, that's the only thing I would say about your putting signage or those video screens above urinals. Then you've got guys who are just watching that or reading that and not paying attention to where they're peeing at all. And more splashback, more problems. As Biggie said, mo splashback, mo problems, right? That was the line. Right. Next call.
What up, Ross, Micah? It's David from New Jersey. Wanted to know, what's y'all's favorite munchy food for either when you're stoned or you're drunk? All right. Have a good one, y'all. Peace.
Okay. Let's talk about munchies first, and then we'll get to drunchies if you want to call them that. But the thing with munchies, which is obvious, if you're for whatever reason somehow been living under a rock and don't know what that, it's when you get real hungry, when you get a craving for food when you're stoned. This often happens. Marijuana increases your appetite, and you try to satisfy that by snacking, basically. My munchie choices have changed drastically over the past 10 years, because when you're a kid, when you're, you know, 18 years old or 20 even, you can eat whatever the fuck for the most part. In your metabolism, in your young age, you're going to get some, you've got some slack there. The results aren't as damning when you put trash into your body. When you become older, when you hit 25, 30 years old, your metabolism slows down substantially, and it is significantly easier to put on weight and then look like shit. So you got to switch your game up. You can't just be doing, you know, a chicken cheesy gordita crunch from Taco Bell anytime you fucking feel like it, which is one of the things that I would argue was one of my favorite munchies back in the day. And yes, it is absolutely disgusting trash, but oh my God, it is so good when you're stoned. Same thing applies to like pretty much everything from Jack in the Box, just fast food in general. I can't do that anymore, man. I can't play that game. I did Fat Guy in 2016. I'm not doing it again. So now what I do is I eat peanut M&Ms.
Okay.
And I eat a fuckload of them.
Okay.
But here's how you do it.
I'm all ears.
So there's a bowl of peanut M&Ms in my house that Tay has put there for, I don't really know why, but they're basically just there for me now. And I basically eat them exclusively when I'm, you know, have smoked. And you got to be careful. The strategy I've developed is one M&M at a time. You can't shovel these into your mouth.
Okay, that's good. That's a good rule, actually.
You thoroughly enjoy each one individually. It's like savoring the, you know, the taste of it. You get the full enjoyment out of each individual peanut M&M. And I'm a peanut M&M guy because I like those more than the regular ones. That's just who I am.
Peanut or the goat?
They are. They're so fucking good. And oh my, they're good when you're not stoned too. I'm just saying that's my go-to munchie in this day and age. And it's I can space out, you know, 15, 20 peanut M&Ms into a half hour if I do it correctly. Just sitting there, popping one in my mouth, chewing it real slow, letting it melt, doing my thing. So not only am I getting the munchies satisfied, I'm not putting too much shit into my body, and it tastes delicious. It's fantastic. It's like an orgasm in your mouth, which, phrasing.
So how many of these do you think you're eating over the course of a stoned out evening?
Somewhere between 15 and 30.
Okay.
It just depends.
Wow.
But fortunately, I try to be responsible enough with my diet and what I put in my body the rest of the time that this doesn't really fuck me up too much. Don't get me wrong. I understand this is still not good, but it could be worse is my point.
Okay.
It could be much, much worse. Micah, you don't smoke regularly.
No.
So I doubt you have an opinion on your favorite munchies.
I don't. Never really been like a, like, you know, you probably have stoner friends back when I used to have like friends that were very into smoking weed that would be like, before they prepared to light up, they'd have their snacks like laid out.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh
yeah. The prep work for this.
It's like half the fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I never really got into that. I used to like I heard some wives' tale one time that vitamin C got you higher.
I think that's with like, that's not a wives' tale. That's legit, but you have to be rolling, like on MDMA. That doesn't work when you're...
Oh, I thought it was for weed. This
I don't
is
think
something,
it works with weed.
And so I used to take those emergency packets back, this is like high school when I'd smoke weed, like my sophomore, junior year. And I just, I'd always have one of those ready to go.
You're just crushing emergency and smoking weed?
Yeah, it was good for your throat too. The vitamin C is good.
Hey, I'm a huge emergency guy. I love that shit. I live by it. It makes me feel like I'm doing something. I feel like it's like mostly placebo effect at this point, but it really does make me feel better.
Yeah. I think we'll talk drunk eating for a minute.
Yeah, please.
Fast food doesn't really appeal to me when I'm drunk, generally.
How is that possible?
I don't know. When I'm drunk, like, I just want to come home and eat like all the... like a leftover slice of pizza, I think is the jackpot.
That's great shit. Yeah.
If there's pizza in your fridge, that's what you want. I like meats and cheeses. Like I'll just come in and like just start slicing cheese,
like a good charcuterie board.
Well, like a drunken charcuterie board. Okay. So just like, oh, I've got a piece of cheddar in the fridge. I'll chop some of that and just shovel it into my mouth.
One thing that my father-in-law does that has now spread into my household. He's a huge advocate. They put together this plate. It's filled with the scoop Fritos, a massive amount of cheese, and then a massive amount of jalapenos. And you get a scoop Frito, you put one piece of cheese on it, you put a jalapeno on it, and you eat it. Holy fuck. It's so good, dude.
That sounds great.
It is. I recommend it. Especially if you like hotter things.
You know, one thing that I dislike, that I don't do often, but when I do, like, it makes me so angry, is the, and you're not a drinker anymore, but... the person that comes, you come home and you crack a beer.
Right.
Like after you've had 15, like let's say this is like a day of, this has been a daytime drinking.
After a tailgate, let's say.
Yeah. You've been out all afternoon, or even if you go out at night, whatever, and you're home at 3 a.m. and you just crack a beer.
Yeah.
And then you take one sip of it and you just leave it out, or you just, you wake up next to a full beer on
your
bed.
That's a terrible feeling.
I hate that. It makes me so angry. I have a friend that does it every time and I hate him for it. And when I do it, I think about what an idiot he is, and I feel like an idiot, and it's like one of the worst things I can do. Especially like maybe 6 months ago, we went to a wedding, and then after the wedding, we came back and we got beers from the bar at the hotel, and they were like $12 a piece. And then I woke up, and they were both next to our bedside tables, like totally full. And I was like, God damn it, this is the worst. Hate this.
That's an expensive mistake.
It was so terrible.
My issue in hotels has always been to get back drunk to my room and order a movie, which as we know costs like $19.99 or some shit.
Yeah.
And then pass out 10 minutes in. Or not even make it past the opening sequence. Like, so I'd wake up in the middle of the night and the credits are rolling and I'm just like, oh, God damn it, that was $20. I love what you said about the stoner preparation for the munchies that are going to be. I know people who will like, and I actually got hit up by a dude about this in the last couple days. Actually, fuck that. It was Matt that we work with. He said that he was planning on smoking later that evening, and I hope I'm not outing him as a whatever.
It's 2018.
Yeah, fuck it. And he had gone to the store beforehand and picked him up a bunch of... he went to Amy's Ice Cream beforehand.
Wow.
And grabbed himself a tub of ice cream so that he'd have it for later that night. And that is such a pro move that I need to start utilizing more. I do it sometimes, but like if you're stopping for gas on the way home and you know you're going to be smoking later that night, go into that gas station, hit that freezer, and grab yourself something nice. Because there's nothing, I mean nothing, like ice cream late night when you're high. And again, not good for you, but this isn't a nutrition podcast.
No.
It's a life podcast.
That's right.
Yeah. As far as drunchies go, I would say the main culprit, well, that's a lie. The second main culprit of me putting on so much weight back in like 2016 when I was just a drunken mess of a human, the first culprit was Matt's El Rancho. I ate there every week, every Thursday without fail. I'd pound like 7,000 calories in drinks when I was there and then eat Mexican food and five fucking bowls of chips on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
Second culprit was the Whataburger, roughly 150 yards from my home. It's a miracle I didn't die. There were late nights where I was buying $25 worth of Whataburger and just taking it back to my house and just sitting there looking like the biggest glutton on the face of the earth. Whataburger and sauces spread out all over the fucking counter. I'd have like chicken fingers, at least one burger, a couple different little fries, all the fucking sauces. It was just absolutely disgusting, but it was the greatest. I don't know if anything in my life will ever match those drunk meals where I was just sitting there with zero responsibility, zero inhibition, just stuffing my gross face with as much Whataburger as possible. And I'll always miss that. That might be the number one thing I miss about drinking, frankly, is eating like a disgusting pig and just not caring.
Well, I think I've always hypothesized that the perfect pre-drinking meal back when you're in your 20s, you're like, let's go rage tonight.
Right.
Is a hamburger or a cheeseburger, whatever. But not like one of those fancy ones you get at a fancy restaurant that's like, you know, 2 inches tall and you know, cost $18. Like, I'm talking fast food, not like McDonald's, but like Whataburger.
Or P. Terry's.
Or In-N-Out. Or P. Terry's or whatever your local fast food burger of choice
Shake
is.
Shack.
Like, it's got just enough fat, just enough carbs. Like, it's just perfect. It coats your stomach for a night of intense drinking. And I can remember one time I came back from Vegas. I was very drunk when I returned.
Uh-huh.
I'll tell the story real quickly. I had like a noon flight out of Vegas, and I stayed up till 4 or 5 in the morning the night before, and then I woke up, and we ran down to the bar or to the sports book to get some bets in before the game started. And they start at what, 9 o'clock, 9 or 10 a.m. whatever time it is there.
Yeah, I never.
So
know.
I'm watching the first quarter, and I'm like, oh, let me have a drink. So I have a grapefruit and vodka, a Greyhound. And it tasted really good. I just slammed it back. I was like, let me have another one. And I had 4 in like a 20-minute period, an hour before I'm supposed to go to the airport. And the guy cut me off. I'd never been cut off at 10 a.m. before.
Wow.
Needless to say, this flight was miserable, as most flights coming back from Vegas are anyway.
Yes.
And by the time I arrived, I was too drunk to drive home from the airport. So I had to pay for an Uber to get home. And I made the Uber. It was so pathetic.
Yeah.
That was like, stop, hang on. We got to stop in In-N-Out. And I remember I got a double-double, and it was the best burger I've ever had in my entire life.
Good God.
But the next day was the worst hangover and like the worst like blackout blues. I wasn't blacked out, but just the worst. I've never felt worse about myself than that.
Yeah, those plane rides back from Vegas, man. I've only done one of them, and just looking around at the people on the plane, everybody's lost their life savings and just destroyed their liver and just probably did questionable things with strippers or God knows what kind of drugs. That was one of the most interesting plane flights I've ever been on. Loved it. All right, next call.
What up, Ross, Mike? This is Sam from Cleveland. I've got a trash or not trash for you. So I was at a bar this weekend, fairly nice, a nicer establishment. but frequented by post-grads, and there are signs, the only signs in the bar, surrounding the bar area, were signs that said abandoned checks will be have a 20% gratuity added. When you start a tab, they give you your card back immediately. Is it a trash move to just not tip, just as soon as you get the card back, all right, I'm done interacting with the bartender for the night besides getting my drinks? You know, is it okay to just leave at the end of the night? 20% gratuity? Trash or not trash? Love the pod, guys. Thanks.
Okay. Okay, so we've all been to these bars, right, where they have this policy. If you walk your tab, they add 20% gratuity. And for me, when I was drinking, that was pretty much a sign that said, once we hand you your card back, you're done. I'm not coming back to sign that fucking tab if you're automatically applying 20%, because that's the amount I would have tipped anyway, probably.
This is not trash. This is the thing to do. You should never close your tab out. Ever. If they hand it to you, you put it back in your wallet and you drink all night, you do whatever you want, you leave that establishment, you don't waste the bartender's time closing your tab out.
You don't lose your card.
You don't waste your own time. Well, like, let's say they hand it back to you. Why would you then, at the end of the night, flag down a bartender who's trying to make money, trying to serve drinks to everyone around them, wait in line, get to the front, say, I need to close my tab, and then she's going to say, ask for your name. Then she's going to have to print out a piece of paper, and then you're going to have to sign, and then you're going to have to give it back to her. This is it. It is. I know it seems a little counterintuitive. This is something we've had in Austin a long time, but a lot of people come to Austin and have never seen this before.
Right.
And once you get this, you can't go back from it.
No, it's genius.
It's the only thing to do whoever is to walk out without closing
your tab.
Whoever
invented this is the guy who should have gotten the Nobel Prize, because this was a huge advancement in the bar industry, and it makes zero sense to me. Every bar should have this at this point. It makes zero sense to me that there are some that still don't. And it blows my mind when I go to a bar with somebody who's like, they just gave me my card back. Like, what's the deal with that? I'm like, dude, what do you mean what's the deal with that? The deal with that is that you are now free. Free of having to fight your way back to the front of the bar at closing time to try to flag down a bartender who's trying to close out 40 other people so that you can tip the exact same amount that they could have automatically applied had they had this signage and this policy that just adds 20% to walk tabs automatically. You're a fucking psycho if you're at an establishment that has one of these signs that says 20% will be added to walk tabs and you go close out. What are you doing? Unless your bartender was just a total dickhead and you need to tip significantly less, which, come on, how often does that happen? Not very often. I love this thing. I love the 20% gratuity it added automatically to walk tabs. Huge
20 is the right number.
It is.
If for some reason you're in a place and it says 30% or 25, then you can consider closing it. But, you know, so for the longest time, most of the bars, there was a period in my life where I spent a lot of time on West 6th Street, which is not really a place I frequent very often now, other than Little Woodrow's, where I'll go have a beer. That being said, that's sort of where we went. I used to work downtown. That's where people sort of in their mid-20s would go. People in their mid-20s still go.
It's the early post-grad bar.
Right.
Area. Yeah.
All of the bars on that street would swipe your card and hand it back to you, except for one, Dogwood, owned by Brad the Bachelor, if that means anything. Brad Woodward, I think, or
whatever his name is.
Good dude. Anyway, if I had a dollar for every time I've left my credit card at that bar, because for whatever reason it was at the end of the street, so you'd go to two or three other ones, and then you'd end up there, and habit is you just hand it to them, and they'd be like, we're holding on to it, and you're like, oh, whatever, sure. Wait, what? And yeah. I'd always leave my credit card there. Always.
I don't think there's a more annoying thing that can happen to you as a human trying to go out and enjoy a night than waking up the next day and realizing you left your credit card somewhere. My policy was always just to cancel the card outright rather than to deal with the shame and frustration of having to go back to the bar. Because you know how it is, though, dude. It's Sunday. You realize your card's gone. None of the bars open back up until 4 p.m. or some shit. It's a nightmare. And I know it's a pain in the ass to cancel your card, too, because you probably got it tied to a bunch of different auto drafts or whatever. But I just could never bring myself to walk back in there and look the people in the eye that had overserved me the night before and say, I need my card back. And they're like, we need to see your ID. And then you get it back, and then you go get in your car, and you drive home, and you're just a piece.
The worst.
It's not great.
Is if you leave it at a strip club.
Oh, that you cancel that.
This happened. Well, one time I left a cell phone at a strip club.
Oh, God, dude. How?
I don't know. Oh. It was before Uber. This is many years ago, if anyone's listening that wants to judge me. But one time I went to a strip club. It was like a Saturday night.
You just mean your girlfriend?
Mostly her.
Yeah, yeah.
But I went to a strip club on like a Saturday night, and I walked over to my friend's house afterwards, so I just left it there. Or I rode with a friend, or I got in a cab, or whatever it was. It was before Uber. So the next morning, I realized I've left my phone there. So then you have to go into the strip club. I remember I went there at like 10 a.m.
Oh.
The girls that are there are, it might have been 11, whatever. The girls that are there on a Sunday morning probably aren't your A-team. I'm not trying to judge anyone.
No, Micah. It's not the A-team. It's not the B-team. It's not the C-team. It's the D-team.
Yeah. The girls that are working when they should be at church.
Yes.
That are in the strip club at 11 a.m. before the football starts. Like, it's just, and you walk in, they're like, I left my phone. They're like, oh, was it an iPhone? I remember because they were shocked that it didn't get stolen.
Right.
At the time, it was old enough that an iPhone was like really a valuable thing to steal. That's the worst I've ever had. But in happier news, Dogwood has since changed. They've come into the 2018 world where they swipe the card and give it back to you.
There you go.
So you don't leave it there. I'm sure they got tired of dealing with that.
It's just so much easier. I don't know why anybody is still holding on to the old ways.
So to answer your question, not trash.
Yeah, not trash at all. Next call.
Hey, Ross and Micah. This is Dale from New Orleans, Louisiana, and I'm calling about the Sweet Baby Ray's issue I had on episode 57. Sweet Baby Ray's is amazing and is used because it is trash. I think every barbecue sauce should not be put on smoked meat. Smoked meat should be done without any sauce. And I put out Sweet Baby Ray's because I don't want people using sauce. Thanks. Love the podcast.
All right. For those of you who are out of the loop here, a Mark Zuckerberg video emerged. He did a Facebook Live in an effort to show people how to use Facebook Live. And it was him in his backyard with his boys.
I think it's a couple years old.
Yeah, it's old. And somebody took this Facebook Live and chopped it into the most awkward and hilarious video I've ever seen in my life, where Zuckerberg is just repeating himself over and over talking about smoking these meats. If you've seen all the smoking these meats references on our Instagram as of late, and you've been trying to figure out what's going on, that's what's going on. We put the Zuckerberg video up on our Instagram, at the Ross Bolin Podcast. You can watch it there. Then you'll be fully in the loop. He says, smoking these meats, brisket and ribs, and Sweet Baby Ray's, roughly 300 times in the course of 2 minutes. It's insane. Zuckerberg is not a human being. He is a cyborg. It is known. The man doesn't even look like human in his eyes. He looks like an alien. Like in Men in Black, when there's the alien wearing the human suit, that's what Zuckerberg looks like. But I love this. This is a strange strategy. He's using Sweet Baby Ray's as a deterrent. He thinks it's shit, so he puts it out because people won't use it.
This is brilliant. And I think last on that episode I said that Sweet Baby Ray's is trash.
I think you did. I've never had it.
And I should
have
be
no
clear.
Idea.
You know, I know people are very loyal to Sweet Baby Ray's. And I've seen taste testing that Sweet Baby Ray's is like the best of the cheap bottled sauces.
I didn't know it existed until the Zuck video.
Oh, it's a thing. I've seen there were some Black Twitter videos. Yeah, some Black Twitter videos kind of introduced me to the fact that the Black community loves Sweet Baby Ray's.
Okay.
And has for a long time. That being said, I'm sure it's fine. I'm sure it's just the same as if you bought a bottle of Kraft barbecue sauce or whatever generic barbecue sauce.
Like A1 sauce?
No, A1 is a steak sauce.
That's a different deal.
If you go and buy like a $2 bottle of barbecue sauce, they're all going to be probably pretty similar. And Sweet Baby Ray's may be the best of that genre.
Okay.
Okay? Here's the problem. They're all way too sweet. This is basically just sugar. That's the only, if you want the tasting notes of these, it's all sugar.
Okay.
And as we know, sugar, one, is death. And two, really has no, I don't want any sugar near my beef. And I'm in Texas, and I eat beef. And when I think barbecue, I'm thinking beef. But that being said, I know sweet sauce is good on ribs. Okay. Anyway, I said that. I got a little bit of blowback, so I wanted to address this. I'm glad this came up. The idea of using this as a deterrent is amazing. But barbecue sauce is the easiest thing to make. Someone said, you don't like Sweet Baby Ray's. What should I be using? Just make your own. It's not hard. What do you like? Do you like mustard? Throw some mustard in there. Start with some ketchup. Ketchup's basically the main ingredient in all of these. If you want something sweet, put some brown sugar in it. If you don't, don't. You want some vinegar, put some vinegar. Use some hot sauce. Like, it could not be easier to make barbecue sauce.
I assume you can Google, how do I make barbecue sauce, and it's very simply laid out for you.
Yeah, and then you just go reach into your pantry and say, what do you like? Oh, spicy mustard, I like that. That'll be good. Oh, is there some hot sauce? Sure. Oh, good, some vinegar. Brown sugar? Nah, I don't want sweet. Worcestershire, 100%. That's it. That's all you have to do. Just go through your pantry, make your own. It takes no time at all, and it's much better because it doesn't have the preservatives and the corn syrup and all the shit in there that any bottled sauce does. So when I said Sweet Baby Ray's is trash, I agree with that, but it's mostly because the entire genre of cheap barbecue sauces you buy is trash.
Okay. Okay, I understand.
And so shouts to this guy, because if this guy made some delicious beef pork ribs or whatever he said he was making, or even some mediocre pork ribs.
He's smoking some meats.
And I'm over at his house, he's smoking the meats, and he just puts out a bowl with some cold Sweet Baby Ray's. There's no way I'm touching that, and I'm going to taste his meat.
Smoking some meats.
Yeah.
You're going to taste that man's meat. Man meat.
I'm going to put it in my mouth.
Smoke those meats. Sweet Baby Ray's. Brisket and ribs. Yeah, okay, look, here's my question. Or here's my point, I guess. I understand what you're saying. I get that you don't like people tarnishing the smoked meats with a bunch of sauce. I like barbecue sauce. I enjoy a good barbecue sauce. But the strategy here is to utilize it like you would, say, a bit of salt and pepper or something. You don't want to douse your food in it. That's fucking chaos. You're destroying the food. You need a little bit. Get a dab. Something. You're just adding a little bit of flavor, right? And I'm not saying that's a necessary thing that you have to do. There are plenty of people who are capable of making barbecue or smoked meats that are good on their own without any sauce whatsoever. But I've always just had this issue. It's like, when is it okay to use sauce and when it isn't okay? Like, for example, my wife, she orders Bernays sauce with every steak she gets, even in like the most expensive restaurants in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And at every time this has happened, I'm like, I feel a bit of shame inside me because I'm with this woman who's ordering sauce for a fine cut piece of meat that has been cooked to perfection in a very fine dining establishment that we are paying an exorbitant amount of money to be in the first place. But the more I've thought about it over the years of knowing her and watching her do this literally every time we get steak, the more I'm like, man, fuck these people. If she likes the fucking sauce on her steak, she should eat the sauce on her steak.
Sure.
This is another example to me where it's like, okay, is it trash? Sure. Are chefs going to fucking roll their eyes at you? Absolutely. But if you like it, just do it, man. Fuck everybody else. It's for you. It's not for them. They're not the one eating it. What you eat doesn't make them shit. It's fine. Just be cool with it. Be reasonable. Like, you don't want to tarnish the taste of your food by using too much sauce. That would be my note.
Sure. You know what? I'm glad you mentioned Bernays sauce. Because that's a difficult sauce to make, and it involves clarified butter and egg yolks, and like that, you need a chef. You need someone. That's actually something that's better at a fancy restaurant. You're probably not going to go into the Sizzler and ask for Bernays.
It's so good. It is. I've tasted it on many occasions on her plate or whatever. Oh my God, it's so good.
Wonderful. It's just rich and decadent and good. I just want to be very clear on this, because barbecue people will come after you. They're very passionate.
They are.
This.
They're fucking crazy.
They are. People love smoking these meats.
Yeah, they do.
I, as a Texan and a Central Texan by birth and nature, I am averse to barbecue sauce in general, but I'm not 100% against it. My point is, make your own barbecue sauce. If you're going to spend 15 hours smoking these meats, all you have to do is take a saucepan, put a few squirts of ketchup in there, a squirt of mustard, some sugar and some vinegar, or take the sugar out, and you've got your own sauce. It's better. No barbecue restaurant in the world, the best to the worst, is going to pour you sauce out of a jar. They're going to make their own. That's why it's all this, ooh, it's my special proprietary sauce. Just make your own. Fuck with it. Enjoy what you like.
And you know what? The fact that
your wife orders Bernays sauce is awesome. This is a fucking alpha move, and I have a lot of respect for her.
Yeah, it's funny. Waiters and waitresses at some places will be like, I'm sorry, what? It's like, do you have any Bernays sauce? They're like, yeah, I guess we can go find some.
Like, that's probably, that's not something that's shelf stable. They've got to whip that up.
Right.
And that's dope. I love that. This is alpha.
How do you know so much about sauce?
I'll tell the story, Ross. In high school, I was the founder and president of the largest club on campus, the Barbecue Club.
You're not fucking with me.
I'm not fucking with you.
You're dead serious.
No, okay. I am. We would drive around to... This was back in 2000, in the early 2000s. Well, let's say 2003, back when I was in high school. So I'm giving you my age. I'm old as fuck. You couldn't get really good barbecue within the city limits of Austin. In the last 10 years, everything has changed. Mostly because of Franklin Barbecue. And there's all sorts. It's Franklin and Law Barbecue and Mickleway and all the... There's a million places within the city.
I had Mickleway the other day. It was fucking fantastic.
It's excellent. But you couldn't do this at the time. So... You would have to drive to Lockhart or to Elgin or to Taylor or, you know, Lano, wherever you had to go.
Buda. And so, don't they have one?
No.
Whatever.
But anyway, to go to the real great places, you have to get in your car. And so as a high school kid, it was just a chance for us to, like, load people up in our cars and drive for 45 minutes away from our parents and, like, maybe drink some beers and go eat some barbecue.
Fuck yeah.
And that was it. That was the whole thing. So I know a thing or two.
Okay,
we'll just say that. And the other thing I will say, I read the Franklin Barbecue book recently on a plane.
Wow.
I got the Kindle edition for like 99 cents. And it's a really fascinating read.
You just gave a book recommendation.
I did. And it's not like, just to be, it's not like a recipe book. It's just sort of like a instructional. Like I read a 35-page chapter about building your own smoker with welding materials. I'm never going to do that. But it was the way it's laid out is very interesting. Very procedural.
That sounds
oddly
like
compelling.
It would be a cathartic read.
And satisfying, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's your book review.
The last thing I'll ask is, so at my favorite sushi restaurant here in Austin, it's Uchi, and I don't care how much of a yuppie that makes me, it's fucking phenomenal. And anything you have to say bad about Uchi, you can come say it to my face, and we can throw hands. But there is this same sort of feeling. There's this issue with sauces, soy sauce in particular. For instance, they have a roll called the Shag Roll that alone by itself, this thing has more than enough flavor than you would ever need in any circumstance. It's incredible. It's delicious. Unfathomable how good it is. It's one of the best things I've ever put in my mouth, period. And sometimes you want to get a little dab of soy sauce for that thing. And if you ask them, hey, can I get some soy sauce? Almost without exception, the waiter or waitress will give you a look. Like, are you fucking serious? You need soy sauce with that? And it's like, look, dude, I'm here paying you to bring me food, right? Here's the exchange. I give you the money. You give me the food I want. That's it. I don't want your opinion on what I do with the food afterwards. If I want to take it and mash it up against my face like some kind of fucking psycho, I'm allowed to do that. Now, you can ask me to leave the restaurant, but I'm allowed to do that. I just have never understood that whole judging people. The other thing with any Chinese or sushi restaurant, I'm not a chopsticks guy. Never learned how to use them. My hands shake too much. I can't fucking do it. So I say, would you mind bringing me a fork? And I try to be very, polite about it because I realize that it's a bit trashy. And the judgment with that too is like, just look, I know it's trash, but I can't use chopsticks. Call it a disability if you want. Just bring me the fucking fork so I can eat the food. And that's all I have to say about that.
Wow. Yeah, the sushi thing is an interesting one. There's some sort of belief that Japanese culture is much more respect focused,
right,
than perhaps
you can offend them.
We savage Americans are.
Yeah,
you want to that fish was treated so delicately and in such a respectful manner that you are disrespecting not only the chef but the fish,
right,
by adding your own soy sauce.
I get that. Look, okay,
yeah.
And maybe I would behave differently if I was in Japan at a restaurant. Perhaps I would, but I'm in America. I'm on fucking South Congress, man. There's no culture to be had here.
I agree.
It's just the food. I mean, I'm there for the food.
Anyway. Yeah, this is a good question. I don't think you're trash. And the other thing that I've learned is that when it comes to eating sushi, if you can pick it up with your hands put it in your mouth, like that is actually like... more polite than picking it up. If it's a single bite, then just you can just reach and grab and put it in your mouth.
That's what I do a lot of the time. I use the fork for there's something they have called a hot rock where you cook your own piece of Wagyu beef. You can't touch that with your hands or your hand will be on fire. So, or not on fire, but it'll hurt. That's what I need the fork for most of the time, whereas other people are using chopsticks. But yeah, I'm a huge proponent of, dude, if it's sushi, pick that bitch up with your fingers, man. They'd like that. They're not opposed
to
that.
And people will get back to us, but it's my belief that that's totally acceptable behavior.
I'm 100% positive that it's totally acceptable behavior. I've been encouraged to do it by a waiter or waitress before. They do not mind that at all. It's totally fine.
So to put a bow on this segment, if you want some sauce, use some sauce.
Sauce it up, baby. Micah's the sauce man now. I had no idea.
I got that sauce.
That's interesting shit. Real quick, a word from one of our sponsors. As you know, a quality night's sleep helps you recover from distractions faster. It prevents burnout. You'll make better decisions. You'll improve your memory. Overall, you're going to make fewer mistakes if you're well-rested. If you're suffering from anxiety or any other mental ailments, exhaustion, whatever, a good night's sleep is so imperative to getting your mind right where it needs to be. This isn't marketing, it's just straight up science, and that's where our sponsor Lisa comes in with the best mattresses and pillows and other sleep-related products in the whole motherfucking game. To design a better mattress, Lisa leveraged 30-plus years of experience and hundreds of hours of testing to develop the perfect mattress for all body shapes and sleeping styles. You don't need a number, you don't need some degree, fucking, you don't have to go try out, they work for everybody. And their mission is to provide a better night's sleep for everybody. They have something called the 110 program, which is fantastic. They donate one mattress for every 10 that they sell. They've donated now 26,000 mattresses and counting. They strive to leave the world a better place than they found it. They also do that with the Arbor Day Foundation. Lisa's planting one tree for every mattress they sell, and they've committed to planting 1 million trees by 2025. So not only is Lisa trying to hook you up with the best night's sleep a human being can possibly get, they are also actively striving to make the world a better place at the same damn time, as we all should be in the RBP gang. This summer, you can go to Lisa.com, LEESA.com/RBP, as in Ross Boland Podcast. And as a member of the RBP gang, you will get $160 off a Lisa mattress. These are unbelievable. I could not more highly recommend them. If you're on there getting a new mattress because your mattress is trash and you need a new one, this is the way to go. You should also grab yourself a Lisa pillow. They are unbelievable. I could not more highly recommend them, as well as the blankets too. Everything they've got is of the highest quality. And if you want to go with the Sapira by Lisa, which is a little bit more expensive, by going through lisa.com/RBP, you will get $235 off your Sapira mattress just for being a listener. On to the next call. Here it is.
Hey, Micah. Hey, Rusty. This is Jack from California. I just want to, I have a question to ask. Why the fuck isn't volunteer time deductible from your taxes? I mean, you can donate money if you're rich or whatever, fucking hell. You just donate $1,000 and it's deductible from your taxes, but if you volunteer for 100 hours, nothing happens. All right. Thanks for your time. Love the podcast. Bye. Later. Cut the check.
To answer your question really quickly, a guy named John Carney of CNBC back in 2012 explained this in some kind of article. But basically, his explanation is that volunteering reduces one's income because the volunteer is volunteering instead of working, right? But reducing one's income reduces one's tax bill, so the volunteer gets the benefit of lower taxes by not making money while volunteering. But that's assuming you make money by working, which most pre-retirement people do. It also assumes that one's income is tied to the hours one works, which is often not true, especially for people who itemize deductions. The other explanation might be that the IRS is concerned about exchanges of cash and assets between donors and charities. Blah, 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 blah. If you need the full-blown explanation, go on there and read this article. It's on nonprofitquarterly.org. If you Google why don't volunteers, are they able to deduct taxes, it'll explain it to you. But the bigger thing that this brought me to was, this is the perfect example of something that I don't understand why the fuck we aren't taught this in college. Why we aren't taught about taxes in college. And I'm sure there are courses specifically that you could take where you could learn this sort of thing. But, I literally have no idea how to pay my taxes, and I'm 31 years old. I'm a New York Times bestselling author. I host 4 podcasts. I'm a man. I'm 31. And I don't understand what people did before the internet to learn how to pay their taxes or to file for a building permit with the city. What did you do? Did you go to the library and have to look this up in a book? That sounds awful and time consuming. And frankly, I don't feel like most people would have successfully been able to do that. It's always fascinated me how we pay so much money for a college degree and they fail to give us some of the more basic things you need to be able to survive and stay out of prison as an adult. Like, people go their whole lives and have no idea how taxes work. Their whole fucking lives. They die without ever knowing what any of that money went to or how it works or any of it. And that's crazy to me. Like, I just, if there was one specific thing I could request that we change about our broken-ass education system, it would be, for the love of God, give your students more common sense stuff that they're going to need to be able to operate in the everyday world and as a part of society in whatever country they're in. Because I know for a fact, as Americans, if you want to learn about stuff like this, you've got to go do it yourself because nobody's teaching you this shit. I never learned anything related to how mortgages work, how getting a loan works for a house or otherwise, how any of that stuff works. You have to go learn it on your own, and that's fine. It just makes it a lot easier to get swindled or to fuck it up and do something that maybe wasn't right and that could eventually get you a fine or even prison time or some shit. I don't know. I'm just saying.
Let me ask you a question. What was your major? You're an English major?
I started out as a business major because they actually got the wrong class ranking for me. They thought I was 52nd in my high school class when I was 52nd percentile.
Oh.
So yeah. They put me into the business school, which was really hard to get into at Texas State. Or I mean, you know, compared to the other schools at Texas State. But I got kicked out of business school after the first semester because I got a 0.40. So then I got into mass communication and then eventually specifically journalism. So yes, I was in a major where
gotcha. Well, I only asked because I was a broadcast journalism major myself.
Yeah.
I took almost no business classes.
Right.
And I just wonder if I would have taken some business classes, would I know how to do my taxes better?
I don't think so.
Because unless like you're a lawyer and you take tax law.
See, that's like, an example of
but
where
I still don't even know if that helps you do your taxes better. Like I do TurboTax and I hope that I'm not going to prison. That's all I know.
Yeah, thank God for TurboTax. Thank God somebody invented
that. Could you imagine? Like my parents, my mother does all of the accounting for my family.
Right. My dad does it for mine.
Right. And she still does my sister and my brother's taxes.
Right.
And she probably doesn't even know what TurboTax is. So she's doing it like by the book and doing the whole thing. And like, it's crazy
to
me.
But once we lose that generation, we're all fucked.
Yeah, because I have no idea what I'm doing. I just say yes and like click, 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 done, take my money, that's it.
My answer to, or my solution to having not learned anything about actually living as a successful adult has always been to call my dad or my mom and ask them because they know they were part of the generation that had to learn this shit on their own pre-internet and all that. But once they're gone, I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do. I just hope that I've learned enough by that point to be able to sustain. But the taxes thing is just a perfect example of like, it blows my mind that we dish out $100,000 or however much it is on taking up that much debt to go to college and then not learn something as simple as how to pay your taxes. That's crazy to me. All right, we got a few more. Let's power through these. Next call.
Hey, guys. This is Hunter from Grove, Texas, and I just want to hear your take on this. So I have a buddy that dips, and when he dips, he'll grab a bottle or something, a spitter, he'll spit in it, and then he'll leave it there, find another bottle, and spit in it, and so on and so forth, and just leave bottles full of dip spit all around the house. So, what are your guys' take on this? Love the show, and peace out.
Oh, I got some things to say. First of all, this is such a college move. Like, I guarantee this dude is in college. Every house I lived in during college was just riddled with dip spit bottles all over the place. I had a good friend named Matt who was a disgusting animal. And if you walked into his bedroom, he would literally leave dip spit cups fucking everywhere. Like he was the little girl from that M. Night Shyamalan movie called Signs. They were fucking everywhere. It was unreal. Like, and this guy had a girlfriend. I have no idea how he ever got laid. But dipping is absolutely disgusting as is. It is. It's disgusting. I do it every day, and I admit this. It's a filthy habit. I would personally argue that it's more disgusting than even smoking. And can you imagine a smoker leaving ashtrays all over a house? That would be fucking gnarly. No smoker has just ashtrays riddled all over the crib. That just is weird. You have maybe a couple. And in fact, smoking indoors, period, is just disgusting. But Also, shout out to a member of the RBP gang who sent me a bunch of fully loaded tobacco-free dip.
That is so dope.
Yeah. At some point in the near future, I'm going to pick a quit date. I'm not trying to lose my fucking lip or my jaw to this shit. I've been doing it for way too long, and it's a crutch, and I need to kick it, and it's going to be hard as shit. And I will be encouraging all members of the RBP gang who are dippers to quit with me. And we'll do periodic updates on the show and hold each other accountable and beat this shit together. More on that in the near future. But you got to get your boy in check. You leaving dip spit cups around is unacceptable and fucking disgusting. You just got to know that.
Yeah, you can't do this. Like, this is, I don't know how to put this. Like, let's say you're one of those guys who dips into a water bottle.
Right.
And then you put the lid on the water bottle and you leave those around the house. That's fucking repulsive.
Throw the
you're
bottle
disgusting.
Away. Just throw it away.
You are fucking disgusting. But at least there's a lid on it and people can't smell it
right.
or knock it over. If you're one of these fucking guys that has fast food cups halfway full with dip all over your apartment, which is a college move.
Yes, it is.
Fucking stop doing this.
You need
and
to stop.
And if you're out of school and you're doing this, you're fucking scum. You're dead to me. Unsubscribe. Quit doing this. This is disgusting.
You need to get it together. This has to stop. I think I very much appreciate you calling in because it really is something that needs to be addressed. If you're a dipper like me, you got to get a handle on the whole storing of it's spit. Can you imagine if a human being was just carrying around a big old cup that they were spitting in for no reason? And
I don't know why. I was always grossed out when people would call it a spittoon. Like,
yeah,
oh, that's my
such,
spittoon.
That's
oh,
don't say spittoon.
Don't say that either.
Don't say spittoon. If you're going to call it something, call it a spitter. But how about this? Don't call it anything at all. Don't ever make anyone else look at it. Just do your best to try to keep it hidden because it's gross. And I'm with you here. I'm a bad guy here. I'm one of the bad guys. But we'll hopefully take care of that soon. Next call.
Yo, what's good, boys? It's Riley Van Wee from Milford, Pennsylvania. I'm behind on the podcast, first of all. And I just got to the one where Micah was talking about the cars on a beach. I just want to say that is the biggest trash move in the goddamn world. Who the hell drives their car on a beach where people are relaxing? That literally makes no sense. You go to a beach to sit down, enjoy the sun, catch some waves, not to have someone driving their fucking souped up WRX down the fucking beach. Just the, I don't fucking, what the fuck? That is a trash move. Anyway, love the pod. I'd love to hear Micah's rebuttal. Micah, you can suck one. Yeah, boys. See you later.
You said you could suck one.
You go first, Ross.
Yeah, okay. I'm 110% with you here. I fucking hate the whole cars on the beach thing, driving on the beach, and I'm not trying to dick you here, Micah. It's just, here's the thing. I agree with you. The beach is a place to enjoy nature, the waves, the sand, and to relax, and I'm not trying to hear a fucking jacked up truck cruise by or some shit. But that being said, what our caller here needs to understand, the beaches in Texas are barely beaches to begin with. If anything, the cars on the beach distract from how ass our beaches are. It's a whole different ballgame here. It's not what you're imagining. Like, if I was in the Cayman Islands and somebody cruised down the beach in a car or a truck on 7 Mile
pissed.
Beach, that's a whole different thing. I'd slash the guy's tires. I'd probably GTA-style drag him out of his car and drown him in the ocean. But that's not what we're talking about. Crystal Beach is not the Cayman Islands. These places that we're discussing, even Port A, It's just not what you're imagining, and it's a different cultural thing, all right?
And, yeah, just, like, it's weird because I don't think people understand what this is until they see it.
Yeah.
My girlfriend, for example, I told her, yeah, we're going to drive on the beach. She's like, what does that mean? And you drive, and then you park, and you're there. You're not like, nobody's racing past. The speed limit's like 15. You know, people aren't drag racing on the beach where you're out there swimming with your niece. That's not how this works.
You find a spot and you post up.
And what driving does is it allows you not to schlep. You don't have to carry anything anywhere. You just park and then you pull your chairs out and you sit there and you are at the beach.
You ever seen that episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm where Larry David goes to the beach and he has to schlep all, he has like a chair or an umbrella. He has to carry all this stuff. He's also wearing like sweatpants and a long sleeve t-shirt and a hat.
Yes.
It's a great episode that really gives you the full idea of like how schlepping sucks.
Yeah, well, my girlfriend was She told me after I had booked this trip to Port Aransas that she kind of hates the beach. She's known for hating the beach.
Oh, wow.
In her friend group. And it's not that she doesn't care for the sand or whatever, but the thing that she hates the most is the schlepping.
Right.
The beaches that she has up north, going out on Long Island or whatever, you'd have to carry, you'd have bags in your, you'd have chairs in a bag over your shoulder and all your drinks and everything else, and you have to carry these miles in the sand. I don't like walking on sand, so we can just drive and park and get out. That's it's ideal. It's amazing.
Yeah. Okay.
But you know what? You can go fucking kill yourself too, tough guy.
Oh, wow.
Whatever your name is.
Wow. Those aren't even fighting words. That's just encouraging suicide words, which, for the record, I don't stand by.
Yeah, I don't know. You know what? Just go fuck yourself.
There you go. That's more realistic of a response.
Yeah, sorry about that.
All right, we're going to play one more because we're running out of time here, and I'll save the other two for another day. But here it is, final hotline call.
What's up, Ross? It's Zach from St. Louis. So me and my boy here, we just posted an Instagram picture from our summer trip to Minnesota. And we were just talking, and we realized someone commented, you know, they commented on the photo, which is all good, but they didn't like it. And we were just kind of pissed about that. Like, and we were wondering, you know, is that a trash move, or are we just, like, overreacting or something? We just want to get your thoughts on that. Someone who comments but doesn't like. What are your thoughts? Love the pod. Keep it up, and we'll keep listening.
Gang, gang, gang.
Oh, sure, hon. First of all, shout out to the good people in Minnesota. Best accents on the planet, in my opinion. Okay, let me rephrase that. Best accents in the United States, in my opinion. Someone who comments on your Instagram post but doesn't hit you with a like, man, it's an extremely suspect move. That's just not supportive. And I'll be honest with you, in the past, I haven't been a great Instagram follower. I've recently stepped my game up and tried to be more supportive of my people by dishing out likes and comments alike. Liking comments, even just doing my best. But there was a point where I got so into just swiping through Instagram mindlessly that I wasn't liking anything. And here's the deal. We're all out here on Instagram just trying to get that endorphin boost from scoring a like or two. The least we can do, especially if we're going to comment on each other's shit, is to hit that shit with a double tap, right? Like, that should be the rule. If you're going to comment, you have to like. Even if your comment is bashing, even if you don't actually like the post, it's not necessarily about that. It's more of an acknowledgement. And we need that, man. I need that feeling of acceptance and approval, right? We're pathetic people, and we need these fucking likes. Help each other out, especially to fellow members of the RBP gang. Like each other's shit. Just be cool. Micah, do you go around commenting on people's stuff without liking?
No. This is a psycho move.
It is a psycho move.
I mean, yeah, it's a psycho move. There's nothing else to be said about this.
Yeah. Good, good. All right, those are the hotline calls. Again, our number is 888-WR-BOLIN. Call anytime, any day, ask questions, whatever you want to do. The hotline is there at your disposal. Quickly, Houston rap song of the week. This week's is by DJ Screw with Lil Kiki. It's titled Pimp the Pen. P-I-M-P space T-H-A, the pen. You know, P-E-N. It's one of the most famous tracks off of DJ Screw's legendary 3 in the Morning Part 2 tape. And Lil Kiki was one of DJ Screw's closest affiliates and frequent freestylers. That album dropped in 1995. This is a pretty good example of the kind of music that DJ Screw produced that resulted in what is Houston rap as a whole now. He was by far and away the biggest influencer on the genre and on the region. And if you want to get a feel for how that went down, this is it. For those of you, especially if you're not from Texas, I know you've probably never heard this song. Go listen to it. Just and give it more than one listen. Listen to it and then come back a few hours and listen to it again. Let it marinate a little bit. Pimp the Pen, DJ Screw, Lil Kiki. The album is titled 3 in the Morning, Part 2. We've got another word from a sponsor here really quickly, Micah. It's Action Alley. I need you to tell us all about it. Just all about it.
It's pretty simple, Ross. If you are going to be anywhere near Ohio or Kentucky this weekend, you need to be at the Kentucky Motor Speedway. in Action Alley, especially if you're between the ages of 18 and 25. Tickets for Action Alley at the Kentucky Motor Speedway are $30. They include access to Action Alley. I keep saying Action Alley.
Action Alley.
It's like a big giant tailgate party. It looks dope as hell. Beers are $2. $30 gets you into a NASCAR race, gets you around a bunch of hot babes, I'm assuming, between the ages of 18 and 25, and it gets you $2 beers. And best of all, or worst of all, well, best of all and worst of all. Best of all, Dan Regester will be there, and worst of all, Jared Borislow will be there as well.
Wow.
So you might be able to meet those two bozos.
Yeah, it really depends on your outlook whether that's a good or a bad thing.
We looked at the other day, it's like midway between Cincinnati and Louisville. That's where Kentucky Motor Speedway is. But you know where it is. If you live anywhere near those states, go check it out.
There you
this
go.
This Sunday.
There you go. Get yourself some. They're sponsoring the show. If you're into that shit, go be a part of it. Have some fun. $2 beers? Get it. We've reached the point in the podcast where you are now legally obligated to rate and review having listened to this far. How do you do that? Go on to Apple Podcasts. Type in the Ross Bolin Podcast. Subscribe, first of all, if you haven't already. Then you have to give us a 5-star rating and write a quick review. It should take you no less than 30 seconds to 2 minutes max, depending on how much you thought you want to put into it. The more, the better. I'm very appreciative of all of you who have taken the time to write long, poignant reviews. And it's a legal obligation. If you don't do it, I have to get my lawyers to contact you. It becomes this whole thing. We'll be drawn out in court for months and months. Thousands of dollars will be spent on both of our ends. You're legally obligated. Rate, review, subscribe. You're also legally obligated, having listened to this far and now being inducted into the RBP gang. If you didn't know it, now you know. Blood in, blood out. You have to tell one friend, family member, coworker, neighbor, shopping cart attendant, anyone who you think might enjoy the Ross Bolin Podcast. You're legally obligated to tell one person about the show per week, every week, until the week you cease to draw breath to your body. Follow the show on Instagram at the Ross Bolin Podcast and on Twitter at Ross Bolin Pod. We are also on Facebook. Nobody cares. Follow me, Ross Bolin, on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at WR Bolin. Also, if you like watching streaming video games, twitch.com/BossRolin13. It's Ross Bolin with the B and the R switched and a 13 on the end. Micah, where can the good members of the RBP gang follow you on social media?
You can follow me on Snapchat and Instagram at Micah Weiner. That's MICAH. WIENER. Thank you.
Thank you all for listening and for all of your support. It means the world to Mike and I, and we put a lot of work into making the show as entertaining for you as we can every week. We will continue to do so. I have decided, as of last night around 1:30 a.m.-ish, we're going to step our game up to a whole nother level. A whole nother level starting very, very soon. And it's going to get real as hell. The show, if you've enjoyed it so far, is going to get even better. So we're just going to keep striving to improve week on, week off, episode after episode. But I'm really going to go full throttle here. I might not sleep anymore, frankly. We'll catch you in a couple days on RBP 60. Peace! Gang, gang, gang. RBP. Gang, gang, gang. RBP. Gang, gang, gang. RBP. Gang, gang, gang. Cut the check.